Sessmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Well, a hail and hearty hello and a good Friday to you on this Good Friday. And we hope that you have a very nice Easter weekend planned. And by now, you've probably figured out by the appearance of somebody that doesn't look like Brad Sessmat that this is not Brad Sessmat. And you would be right. I'm Jeff Munn. I'm in for Brad today. Some of you know me from my work with Arizona State University women's basketball. Our season just ended. As fate would have it, if we were still playing basketball, I'd be in Sioux Falls, South Dakota today in a very heavy jacket. As fate would have it, I'm here, and I'm very glad to be here. And you also know that I have a history, 19 years total, with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, I thought when we were going to have this show today, and I got called to come in and fill in on this show, that we'd have a nice, quiet show to have a little fun, talk some basketball, and then Gary Shandling passed away, and then the stuff that came out yesterday afternoon. So, as it is in the world of talk shows, you have to change on the fly, and Eric Sorensen did a magnificent job of changing this show around at the last second. We will have, coming up later on, Jude LaCava, sports director at Fox 10. A couple weeks ago, this is what's interesting to me. If you were listening to this show, and I hope you were, I think it was 4 weeks ago today, Brad and Jude talked about the subject of the D-backs moving out of downtown. Eric Sorensen, if you can join us here for a moment. I listened to that show that day. That was the same day that that Brad and Jude had a wonderful chat about the late Jim Tazarak. But they mentioned that the D-backs were thinking about going to the East Valley. Now, that I was surprised when I heard that. But because I heard it 4 weeks ago, the news of yesterday didn't knock me over. I mean, you kind of saw it coming in a way. And I was teeing that up for you, Eric, if you want to say something.
Okay, I didn't know if you...
I was just going to give you credit for bringing this story to the attention of the masses 4 weeks before it hit air.
I didn't know if you were asking me a question or making a statement, so I was just going to let you continue.
By the way, is it this camera that I'm on?
Yeah, just look straight ahead.
I'm sorry. I keep trying to figure out which camera. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to be looking directly at you, and I apologize.
All right. Or look wherever, because we switch cameras. Jared Nielsen pops you on from camera to camera.
Oh, that's right. Jared, I guess that's your deal. Okay.
And it's good timing, actually, Money, that you're here, because... Nobody, very few people know the ins and outs of Chase Field like you do.
And this is true. And that's where I'm going to start today. We are going to get to as much of the NCAA tournament last night. I'd like to let Dick Vitale know that Oregon deserved to be a number one seed, and he can now officially shut up. We'll talk about that. Suns play at Sacramento tonight. They have the Celtics in tomorrow night. What else is going on locally? I'm going to have something to say about Bruce Arians. We'll get to all that. Bill Gutekunst will also be with us. And again, things change on the fly. We're going to use our regular segment, Goody at the Movies, to preview Batman versus Superman. I have a very basic question for Goody. Why are Batman and Superman fighting each other? What? And I'll let him explain that. And we'll also talk a little bit about our memories of two very important people in the entertainment and sports world, in particular with Joe Garagiola, who left us this week, and, of course, comedian and Tucson resident for a time, Gary Shandling, who passed away very suddenly yesterday. But let's go ahead and get to what I'm sure a lot of people are still talking about, and that was the dueling press conferences yesterday. I do come at this from a different perspective than maybe some other people for a couple of reasons. Number one, Chase Field and I, or Bank One Ballpark and I, have been kind of tied together for 19 years. And only recently did we kind of break apart. I was there the night we broke ground on the ballpark, an event that, by the way, was emceed by the late Joe Garagiola. And I've worked there. I worked there on an everyday basis, Monday through Friday, for the first 8 years the ballpark was open. And then when I moved to a full-time broadcast position, I was not there in the off season. I would come in occasionally. But I have a pretty good working knowledge of the facility. So let's take this point by point. The first thing that I want to get out of the way, are there structural issues that need to be addressed with Chase Field? The answer to that is yes. You may not see them when you come to a game, but there are structural issues. The building is 18 years old. Like any facility or structure that's 18 years old, it needs to be maintained. And that is a legitimate concern on the part of the Diamondbacks. So their concerns are 100% legitimate. As it relates to the interpretation of the lease, I am not a legal person, and I'm not going to try to convince you that I am, because I'm not. There is clearly a disagreement over the interpretation of the lease as it pertains to the responsibility for those repairs. And I think the best thing that can be done now is for the legal representatives for both sides to get in a room and settle it. Unfortunately, because of the press conference the county held yesterday, this is now a very public issue. And when it goes public, it has a tendency to slow the process down because the public gets involved and they issue their angst and their frustration. And boy, the reaction on Twitter after the Diamondbacks press conference yesterday was not pleasant in any way, shape, or form. But I'm trying to be the voice of reason here. I'm not trying to take sides one way or the other, but I just want you to kind of come toward the middle on this. Please understand this. What Derek Hall did in drafting that letter to the county, it was something that any person in his position as a CEO would do to protect the interest of his business. We have to be reminded, unfortunately, from time to time, that sports teams are businesses. They are different. If this is Bank of America and they operate a high rise on county land and the county's the landlord and they want the county to live up to the terms of the lease as they view it and pay for their share of the repairs, you and I don't really care. It doesn't make the paper, but because it's a baseball team and there's a box score in the sports section every day, and we want the baseball team to be successful, and we want the baseball team to invest its money in pitchers like Zach Greinke and players like Paul Goldschmidt, we do tend to pay more attention. But at the end of the day, I don't have this as a fact, but this is just my own opinion. This is not a money grab. The Diamondbacks are not trying to scare people into thinking they're going to leave Phoenix. They're not going to leave Phoenix. I really believe that they, number one, would like to find a way to stay downtown because moves, even in the best of circumstances, are painful and they're cumbersome and they're costly. And I don't think the Diamondbacks just want to all of a sudden pick up stakes and move somewhere else in the valley. The other thing that I believe fully is that Derek Hall did what he is charged to do as the president and CEO of a business that operates in a facility that is publicly financed. He went to the landlord and said, we interpret the lease this way, and if you can't meet that obligation, please allow us to seek other opportunities. The county, of course, responded by saying, it says in the lease that you can't do that until 2020, and we're going to hold you to the lease because we're trying to protect the taxpayers. The only thing I will say as an opinion about all this is not so much about who's right and who's wrong, but I think it's important also to point out something, and I'll try to do this in as capsule form as I can. It is impossible for a private business to win a PR battle, and I don't think that's what the Diamondbacks were fighting yesterday, but it is almost impossible to win a PR battle against a government entity that got out in front and said, we're trying to protect the taxpayers. The best example of that that I can show you is Cleveland. Art Modell, a very loyal guy to the city of Cleveland, obviously owned the Browns for 30-plus years, played all those years in Municipal Stadium, which, even at its best, was not a great facility. And then as the 90s began to evolve and new stadiums were popping up around the NFL, and at the time, remember, the NFL had no salary cap, the Browns were woefully behind the curve because they didn't have suites and they didn't have a beautiful state-of-the-art stadium with a lot of additional revenue streams. The city of Cleveland had made arrangements to fund and build a ballpark for the Cleveland Indians, but they forced, I don't know if force is the word, but Art Modell had to stay at Municipal Stadium, and that building clearly was, to the naked eye, decaying on a pretty rapid basis. Modell could not on his own afford the improvements. He went to the city and at bare minimum literally begged them to go in and refurbish Municipal Stadium to make it state of the art, and they told him no. And you know what the story was from there. once he exhausted all avenues to try to fix things in Cleveland, and he couldn't get it done, he moved the franchise to Baltimore. And despite the fact that for 30-plus years he was seen as the favorite son of Cleveland, he almost overnight turned into a villain. The moral of the story is this. This is a reminder that sports teams are businesses. And it is also a reminder that the executives who run these teams have a responsibility to protect the business interest. And unfortunately, because it is a sports team, it kind of ventures into areas that touch emotions and touch nerves. Believe me, I worked for the Diamondbacks before they took the field. And if I had a nickel, I hate to use that analogy, for every time somebody vehemently complained to me about the quarter-cent sales tax, it's a hot-button issue. And unfortunately, and I know that Derek realizes this and the D-backs realized this before they conducted their press conference yesterday, people were going to be angry. But Derek has a responsibility as the president and CEO of a business to protect the interest of his investors and of the operation of his business. That is simply all he was doing in drafting that letter to the county. Unfortunately, because it is a sports team, it tends to get more public attention, and this is now a public issue. That's the real tragedy of all this. And what needs to happen is the lawyers need to get in a room, maybe with a third party, and get an interpretation, a clear and indisputable interpretation of the lease, and move forward from there.
I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
And you can just answer it in like a minute, if you don't mind. How much of all of this stadium remodeling, things need to be upgraded, has to do with attendance?
Well, I would love to have Derek, and at some point I'm sure Brad will have Derek on to explain this. The problem financially for an organization when they play in a facility that they deem too large, attendance has been an issue in the sense that the ballpark was built probably too big. They would like to reduce the seating capacity. The other thing there has been a concern, I think, about is it a hindrance to attendance to be downtown?
Sure.
Now, my answer to that is no.
I disagree.
I really, you think it is a hindrance?
Absolutely. Look at the TV numbers in the summer. Look at how big those TV numbers are. Even when the team is average to below average compared to the people that are actually sitting in the ballpark in the dead of summer.
I agree with you, but is that based on the fact that the ballpark is downtown? If
it,
the ballpark
could,
was
it's
in
one
the
of,
East Valley,
it's one of many things, Jeff.
My
it's
contention this. Is this. Jerry Colangelo built those facilities, America West Arena and Bank One Ballpark, downtown for a number of reasons, not the least of which being you go to any major American city, every major traffic artery in a major American city points where?
Downtown.
Downtown. When you go to a game at America West Arena or Talking Stick Resort Arena, or the ballpark, you are 5 minutes from four major freeways. The inflow and outflow from events at those two facilities are infinitely easier than they are at University of Phoenix Stadium. It's no fault of the Cardinals,
yep,
but because it's in a suburb with one freeway and essentially two major cross streets, it basically comes down to one way in, one way out. It's not a big deal for the Cardinals because they play their games on Sundays. But for a sports franchise, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, that plays a lot of games during the week, it does become an issue. And that's why downtown is always a preferred location, one of the reasons. We will see how this all unfolds. But again, I think the venom that's being directed at the Diamondbacks and Derek Hall is a little misguided, only in the sense that Derek is an executive protecting a business. And this is part of what he's charged to do, and he did it. And he did it knowing that there was going to be this kind of reaction. And he didn't shy away from it. I give him credit for that. But money grab? I really don't believe it's a money grab. I think he has legitimate concerns about the franchise moving forward. We'll take a break. When we come back, Jude LaCava and I will discuss this in greater detail. I love talking to Jude, and I know you like hearing him, so that's what we'll do right after this on the Brad Sussman Show. There are a lot of people in the media in Phoenix that I respect. There's a lot of people in the media in Phoenix that I like. There is a select group of people that are both to me. One of them is our next guest, Jude LaCava, Fox Sports Fox 10 sports director, a guy that I have a great deal of personal affection for as a human being, and a guy that I respect for his professionalism, the way he does his job. And I am very excited to have Jude on today because I can't think of anybody to talk about that would be better qualified to talk about this issue regarding the D-backs and Chase Field than Jude. And I was mentioning, Jude, that 4 weeks ago you were on with Brad, the great conversation the two of you had about our friend, the late Jim Tazarak. And you got to talking about the fact that the D-backs were looking at relocating maybe to the East Valley. So when I heard this news yesterday, I was like, okay, well, I heard this 4 weeks ago on Brad's show. So this isn't something that just, in a large respect, popped out of nowhere, is it?
No, it's not. I think what really popped out was the passionate disagreement the county has with the Arizona Diamondbacks that really bubbled to the top yesterday and almost a point-counterpoint dispute, and that was very, very public. And, you know, I'll say this, Jeff. I have a great deal of respect for Derek Call. I think he does his job masterfully. Personally, I really like Derek, but this is horrible timing from a standpoint that, you know, what is really necessary and what is the real argument here? And if we look at big picture, and I I'm in sports, and sports has been very good to me, and so have these teams, whether they be the D-backs, the Suns, or the Coyotes. But I have a tough time digesting how this played out yesterday, because when I look at what's happened over the many years, and let's not forget the early 90s when Joe Garagiola, the late Joe Garagiola, yes, led the charge to bring baseball to the Valley. A property tax was just decimated at the ballot box. And then Chris Hurstum came up with the Hurstum bill, and we went to a board of supervisors vote of majority vote that Jim Bruner really put his career on the line for. And we were able to, with taxpayer money, $238 million, build then Bank One Ballpark. It wasn't easy. There was a city councilwoman that was literally shot at. There,
yes,
were death threats to Jerry Colangelo, as you remember, Jeff. And there was a tremendous amount of strain and tension to get this done. And that seems to have been forgotten in more recent weeks. Now you look at what is in dispute and you see a county that can't even figure out a way to have enough polling stations on Tuesday. It became a national embarrassment with these 3- and 4- and 5-hour lines. You have a state educational system that is in desperate need of funding. You have a $1.4 billion light rail that, oh, by the way, drops fans right at the doorstep of Talking Stick Arena and Chase Field.
Right.
And a tremendous amount of infrastructure that would support both of these facilities. And now you have a Diamondbacks organization that says, we're not happy with our deal. We want to do a lease, a new lease. And a county that says, listen, we've got $16-18 million to help you out with some of the repairs, but we're not in the best of shape. And I think the timing of this puts a real sour taste in the average taxpayer's mouth to say, wow, in these times, you're going to go there in a industry that is thriving, a multi-billion-dollar industry. I just think the optics on this, the timing on this, are really a negative for the D-backs. And we said it last night. It's unfortunate. I would have rather have seen these types of intense negotiations in private.
Yes.
Figure out an answer, figure out a way. But now it's very public, and I don't think the D-backs look very good right now.
The other thing, and I said this in the opening segment, Jude, is that when it goes public, it tends to bog the process down. Because both sides are very attuned to what their constituents are saying. In the case of the D-backs, it would be their investors and their fans. And in the case of the county, it's the general populace. And I think all that does is just slow everything down. And you can't get – the other thing is, and both sides have alluded to this, that this dispute has been ongoing for 4 years. To me, that isn't something that's resolved in a one-hour meeting in a boardroom.
Yeah, it's true. And there, you know, there has to be, you know, in today's climate, the last thing you want to do is threaten to kind of redo a lease and maybe move whatever particular, whether it's at the reservation, at Talking Stick. But you just don't want to go there because we are seeing many of these sports leagues just thriving financially, whether it be the NFL, Major League Baseball is doing quite well, the NBA is doing quite well globally. So you have to be careful, especially with the institutions I mentioned, the transportation needs, the education needs in the state. And I think that I would have rather had closed-door negotiations saying, look, maybe there is a way. If we want to retrofit this stadium, and I know that the D-backs would like to, and they want to keep this up to date and safe and the proper repairs, maybe there's a corporate sponsor. Maybe there's a middle ground here. The county and taxpayers allocated $238 million over 20 years ago to get this thing done. They're having a tough time. But you don't want to air that laundry right now and create more, as you say, Jeff, of a Grand Canyon of a dispute. And I just think that, you know, the timing on this is really bad. And then there's another context that has to be mentioned, and this is really unusual. We have three professional teams in a race right now for public money. Now, it could be city money, it could be state or county money, but we have the Arizona Coyotes looking for potentially a new home in the next year or two. We have the Phoenix Suns and Robert Sarver looking for, and he has stated publicly in recent months, he wants a new arena. And now we have the Arizona Diamondbacks saying, look, we need some repairs, or maybe we got to reconsider where we're going to play. We have three pro teams in a race to see who's going to be first in line. That further complicates this issue. That's why I think this is a really significant story, because, you know, when you look back historically at what's happened with franchises, and I'm not trying to be alarmist here, but one of the big reasons the Cleveland Browns with Art Modell many years ago left Cleveland is that Cleveland allocated dollars for the Cleveland Indians and Jacobs Field, and the Browns felt slighted. And they said, where's our stadium? We've been a better winning team. We've been here. There's more fans here. They picked up and left for Baltimore. My point of bringing that up is every one of those teams I mentioned is trying to get first in line. And this is going to be a very, very difficult time over the next year or two on how this plays out.
You mentioned the Native American communities, and I want to approach this from two angles. We're talking to Jude LaCava, sports director at Fox 10 on the Brad Sesmatt Show. I'm Jeff Munn in for Brad. Let's start first with location. There have been some concerns, not really stated out loud by people, that the Diamondbacks are hampered to some degree by being in a downtown facility. I don't agree with that, and you just talked about it. Transportation, infrastructure downtown, all kind of add up to a better game experience for fans, I think. So, number one, is it, and I know that going back to the show you did with Brad a month ago, that the subject of going to the East Valley, because that's the population center of the Phoenix metro area now, is a prime factor. I look at it and think it's risky, and the Coyotes have suffered for it by being in one side of the valley. The other side of the valley says we can't get there for a weeknight game. My question is this: is it really that much, in your view, a detriment to any franchise in this market to be downtown?
I think it's the best possible location because of the centrality of the location. I think the light rail is part of that. I think the fact that on weeknight games you can finish up work and go down and catch a game, whether it be the D-backs or the Suns. I think, obviously, the Coyotes have suffered horribly since they moved to the West Valley on weeknight games, and based on logistics of getting to and fro your home in the East Valley and getting kids back to bed on a school night. I can't think of a better location than where they're at right now. And the other part of this, Jeff, is this. Fenway Park is three times the age of Jay's Field. Wrigley Field is three times the age. Look, I'm not saying it's the best park in baseball, but it's in pretty good shape. Does it need some repair and maintenance through the years? Of course. But, yeah, they built it on the big side, 52,000. And you know, I know they would like a more intimate experience. Maybe over the next 10 years they can retrofit and do something with the upper deck and make it a little bit more intimate. But I don't – where do we get off on saying that this is really old? This is really old stuff when it comes to other priorities that this state and county needs. And I would just caution people to kind of look beyond some of the lingo here and say, old? Wait a minute. You know, if I look at some of the parks that have existed through the years, they've done fairly well. Hey, if it's not the Taj Mahal, you know, you can spruce it up, but let's be realistic where our priorities are. And again, I'm a sports guy. I benefit from these teams. I've made a living on these teams. But I'm just trying to give context. I don't see old when I go in the Chase Field. Now, I can see where it needs some repairs and some paint and some things, but let's not get carried away here.
The last question I've got, about 2 minutes, and I want to give you time to answer this in detail. We've talked about the Native American communities, and the one thing about the Native American communities is their political structure is much more streamlined, and they can get things done in terms of approving financing quicker than a municipal government or a county government or a state government. But aside from all that, you touched on this a moment ago. The Coyotes have said, you know, repeatedly, we need a new home, and there's been this underlying rumor that they'll be in Las Vegas, they'll be in Seattle if something doesn't work out. Give me your gut feel, and I'm going to center it on the Diamondbacks because of the time we have left. Is there a scenario where you would see this franchise moving to another market?
No, I don't see it as far as the Diamondbacks is concerned. I can't say that in the long-term future of the Coyotes, only because there still is not a definitive plan in place. I know there's been talk about a co-op deal with ASU on a new arena at the 101-202. I think that still has a long way to go. I know they have talked to the folks, the tribe out of Talking Stick, about land. That is a fact, but it's still a little bit nebulous. I don't see, and let's also remember this, Major League Baseball has invested a lot in the franchise and in baseball in Arizona. With the Cactus League, it would have to go through ownership approval. I don't see any danger with the D-backs leaving. I'm more concerned about the Coyotes long term. And as far as Talking Stick is concerned, let's also remember this, Jeff. Talking Stick built over $200 million for the Rockies and D-backs, and they did break their lease in Tucson to join in. It's a beautiful facility, and
yes.
I understand what they tried to do. But let's face it. The tribe did not do all that well with their financial deal with both teams. They really created a beautiful gift for both teams, the D-backs and Rockies out there. So if you look at the long-term concern, it's more about the relationship between the teams and the county, and then what is necessary in how their perception is looked upon with the taxpayer saying, where do we look at our priorities in terms of what's important versus what is extraneous taxes for teams that are really making a ton of money. And I know that sounds counterintuitive coming from a guy in sports, but it's time we take a deep breath and find a middle ground.
I agree with you, and I agree that I don't think there's any danger of them leaving the market. Jude, I really appreciate the time. We got you on short notice,
very briefly, and I know he was close to you. Joe Garagiola
Yes.
was Mr. Baseball. And
Yes.
Joe led the charge to bring baseball here back in the late 80s. I was lucky enough to arrive at that time. And we'll miss him in so many different ways, personally, professionally, and what he meant to the sports fans in this valley. And it's a real loss. His philanthropy, just who he was and what he represented. And I hope that And I do believe there'll be not only a memorial, but a significant point of reference and remembrance for Joe and all the great work he did right here in the Valley.
I agree with you. And the D-backs are already at work on that. And I share those sentiments with you 100%. My friend, I appreciate it. Thanks for being with us.
Anytime, Jeff. Take care.
You got it. Jude LaCava, Fox 10 sports director, and it's such a joy. I remember that day 4 weeks ago when he and Brad had that long conversation that started about the late Jim Tazarak and transitioned into talking about stadiums. I could have listened to that for hours, and it's always great to hear Jude's perspective on things. And trust me when I tell you, friends, if you've just moved to this area recently, there are a few people in this town that have as much investment passionately and otherwise in sports in this community than Jude, and it's always great to hear his perspective. We'll take a break. I've got some thoughts about Joe Garagiola. Got a few other things I just wanted to get out of the way about this, the story about the D-backs. And, yes, we're going to talk some college basketball. I think there is an East Coast bias going on, and I'll explain. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show on Good Friday. Hope you've got a great Easter weekend planned. We're back with more right after this break. Brad Sesmatch Show on a Friday. Jeff Munn for Brad. Appreciate you tuning us in on Sports360AZ.com and AZCentralSports.com. Remember now, Sports360AZ.com, you can get all kinds of great local sports content, including every once in a while, this guy does a podcast and writes a few things here and there. I'm going to write an article, by the way. I decided this today about the 76 Phoenix Suns. They're going to honor that team tomorrow night, 40th anniversary, and the Celtics are in town. And I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to be out there, and I'm going to write an article. You'll understand. I don't have the time here to go into how significant that team was to this community for a lot of reasons, but the article will take care of it. And I'm certain Brad will talk more about it, and I'm certain he already has on this program as we move through 2016. Couple of things, and I want to hit these very quickly. First, to put a bow on the D-back subject, and I promise we'll get off of it as soon as I get this out of the way. I agree with Jude. I don't think there's any danger of this franchise leaving the market for a couple of reasons. Number one, this franchise has been very successful. There's a lot of things that the media never latches onto, and I don't mean the sports media. I mean the general news media in this market, and it's absolutely mind-boggling that they don't talk about it. Number one, every year this franchise has operated, they have drawn at least a minimum of 2 million fans. They can't say that in a lot of other cities. In a lot of major cities, they can't say that. But the D-backs have done it every year since they started. The other thing is, the media that is anti-tax, and I think of the New Times in particular, they never seem to report about how much the county coffers are get a benefit from the revenue that they have derived from Chase Field. You never hear about it. You never hear about how much things have improved in the county library system, at the county hospital, because of the revenue that is generated from Chase Field and surrounding businesses.
I believe they said the ballpark has generated $8 billion since it's been opened.
So that's a $238 million investment that has generated $8 billion in revenues. So, yeah, I'm not saying you have to love taxes. Nobody loves taxes. And I could tell you a couple stories, a couple of funny little stories. I don't know if I have time to do this. I'll tell one. The tax capped in 1997. The agreement was $238 million, the tax is done. So sometime in 97, they hit $238 million, tax is over. I do an event in January of 98. Guy comes up to me and knows that I'm with the Diamondbacks and starts complaining to me vociferously about how much he hates paying that tax. Paying in January of 98. And I said, sir, you haven't paid that tax in 4 months. And he just kind of walked off. The other thing, 2009, we're doing an event on a winter tour in Globe. Guy comes up to me, says, I love having a baseball team here, but I hated paying the tax. And I said, sir, you live in Gila County. You didn't pay the tax. See, what happens when you say the word taxes, it gets people really fired up. And I understand that. But I would just implore the media that has hated this tax from the outset to just be fair and report on, number one, the revenue that's been generated. And you might also include a line about all the things that this franchise has done in the community, financially and otherwise. That might not be a bad thing to put in an article when you're going to decry about taxes and what have you. And again, I'm not asking people to like taxes. Just be fair. Quick thoughts. Joe Garagiola. Jude is absolutely right. Nobody was a bigger champion for baseball in this community than Joe Garagiola, Sr. And I was reminded of this a couple of days ago, the day that he passed. Joe he said a lot of great things, but one thing that he said right before the franchise began play in 1998, nothing gets into the soul of a city like a baseball team. And he was absolutely right. You know, we've had a lot of successes here with our teams. The Coyotes went to a Western Conference final. The Suns, all their successes over the years. And the Cardinals and the fact that they are now among the elite teams in the NFL. And there has been great passion for all of these teams. But nothing touches the soul of a community quite like a baseball team in good times and in bad. And Joe was absolutely right about that. And that's why he wanted to see baseball in this city. And he was 100% on target about that. The ironic thing, I don't know if the word is ironic. A lot of the conversations that Joe and I had the last few years were not about baseball. They were about something we both feel very strongly about, and that's St. Peter's Indian Mission. Catholic mission and school out on the Gila River Indian Reservation. I visit there not nearly as often as I should, but as often as I am able to. And out there, Joe had a nickname, Awesome Fox. And I went out there yesterday to see the Desert Sisters, my friend, Sister Martha Carpenter, and she said, we've been kind of going back and forth between laughs and tears. And all of us, I think, feel kind of the same way. And we owe a debt of thanks to Joe Garagiola Sr. that we'll never be able to repay. Quickly about the NCAA tournament. Dick Vitale, the day of the selection show, went on and on and on about the line, I have no problem with Oregon. Well, if you say it six times, Dick, you've got a problem with Oregon being a one seed. I'd just like to know, do you still have a problem with Oregon being a one seed and Michigan State being a two? Oregon beat Duke, and we all know how Dick Vitale feels about Duke. Look, bottom line, I'm going to do this very quickly. Does ESPN have an East Coast bias? Yes. Yes, they do, because most of the really strong college basketball programs are on the East Coast. I don't think that the key players at ESPN, Jay Billis, Seth Greenberg, Jay Williams, Dick Vitale, saw that much of Oregon. They can't. Their schedules won't allow them to do it. I don't think they saw that. I know Vitale didn't. He knows they're good. But to say they didn't deserve a one seed, they won the Pac-12 regular season. They won the Pac-12 tournament. They had 26 wins. They not only won the Pac-12 tournament, they grinded the last two teams they played into mulch. Two NCAA tournament teams, Arizona and Utah.
And I believe they had more wins over top 50 or top 100 teams than any other team in the country.
Exactly.
I think they had 10 wins over top 50 teams.
I would just, and I know I'm just, you know, this is never going to happen, but I just wish that the people at ESPN, and I love Dick Vitale, I think, you know, it does my heart good to hear him go on and on this time of year. But come on, Dick, seriously. You said it six times, I don't have a problem with Oregon. Yes, you did have a problem with Oregon. Just admit it. Just go on the air and admit, I didn't think Oregon deserved a one seed because I don't watch them much and I don't think the Pac-12 is a legitimate, strong basketball conference. Just say it, because it's so obvious to everybody that's how you feel. Honesty will cleanse the soul. Just go on the air in the next day or two and admit, I got it wrong and I didn't think the Pac-12 was very good. I didn't think Oregon deserved a one seed and I was wrong. You'll feel a lot better. Bill Gutekunst up next. A lot to talk about. Not all of it pleasant, unfortunately. A couple of people very important in the entertainment world, when we just talked about past this week. And we will preview Batman against Superman. And why the heck are Batman and Superman fighting? We'll discuss that next on the Brad Sesmet Show. It's Friday, and Bill Gutekunst is with us. Before I get to Bill, I said I was going to talk about this. I'm going to take 10 seconds. Bruce Arians, I know what you were trying to say. Just get up and clarify it and apologize so we can move on. Thank you. I would appreciate that. Just, you know, and if you're not aware, he said that parents who wouldn't let their son play football are fools. I know what you meant, Bruce. Football teaches a lot of life lessons. Just tone it down a little bit. And you really do owe some people an apology, or at least a clarification, and I think that would be a good thing to do as soon as possible. Just my opinion. Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central, Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic, joins us. We have a lot of sad news to talk about, but I'm going to start with a movie that I think is coming out this week. Bill, why the heck are Batman and Superman fighting with each other?
This is not a great... Yes, there might be that movie coming out this week that people have been looking forward to for about 3 years. They're fighting. They actually, this movie is frustrating in a lot of ways. One is, it actually sets up some kind of interesting questions, and then just blows everything up, like you know, buildings and towns and everything. There's a reason that they're fighting, and it's not that far fetched if you kind of live in a superhero world, and it's happened in the comics before. But the gist of it is, if you saw Man of Steel, and I see you have a guess, but you probably didn't.
No.
In the climatic battle, Superman and General Zod, the main bad guy, they're from Krypton, so they have superpowers on Earth. They have this massive fight that basically destroys Gotham City, or I'm sorry, Metropolis.
Metropolis.
And they sort of retrofit this movie to come back, that Bruce Wayne, who's a billionaire, right, and he owns all these businesses, one of the buildings they destroy is Wayne Enterprises, and it kills a bunch of his friends and all this stuff. So he's kind of mad. And then the whole thing is like, if Superman, if nobody can defeat Superman, and he seems to be a good guy, but what if he turns bad and decides to make like slaves of us all or something? So they're kind of mad about that. And then Superman doesn't like Batman because he thinks that Batman's just a violent vigilante. And he is. I mean,
yeah,
that's what makes Batman, and has always made Batman a more interesting character than Superman. Nothing can beat Superman. I mean, where do you go with that?
Right.
But Batman is insane. He's like a violent criminal in his own right. He just goes after bad guys. So they're kind of at each other. But then what makes it dumb is Lex Luthor ends up kind of blackmailing them into fighting. It just gets big and dumb after starting out kind of smart. So that's disappointing. And it's also really long. It's like 2.5 hours.
Oh, you can't do that. Listen, and the other thing, I'm tired of watching every actor in Hollywood play Batman. We all know the best Batman ever was Adam West, period, end of statement. Get on with it.
I love Michael Keaton, though.
Keaton really got it. He got it. He added a little hint of comedy or just whimsy to the character. But he got the dark side of Batman as well. And I've always been a big fan of the TV series.
Christian Bale's good. The thing about Batman is, and the reason everybody wants to play him is because you get to do that dual nature thing.
Oh, it's a great challenge as an actor.
Yeah.
It is a great challenge.
I mean, they try to make Superman all dark and everything, but it's like he is literally in a bathtub with Amy Adams in part of the movie, you know.
Oh,
he can do anything
okay.
he wants, whenever he wants.
Now I know why Ben Affleck signed up for that role. Let's transition. I hate to do this, but we're kind of moving through things at a rapid pace. I read your column today about Gary Shanley. That was great. And I thought the part that jumped out at me most was, in this day and age of YouTube and all other video options, we never have to really use the word was with, obviously, there won't be any newer material, but we can go back and watch Gary Shandling through a lot of things. But I was never a huge Gary Shandling fan. But when you read the description of his shows, and you talked about both the It's Gary Shandling Show and the Larry Sanders Show, the first one, It's Gary Shandling Show, was essentially Seinfeld before Seinfeld, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a good comparison because he does talk to the audience a lot. He does a little stand-up at the beginning of it. But it was even more Seinfeld than Seinfeld. I mean, it was a sitcom about a stand-up comic named Gary Shandling. And even the theme song was like, this is Gary Shandling's song.
Yeah.
You know? Everybody in the show knew that they were on a sitcom. So they talked to the audience and stuff. And it was really inventive and really brilliant and really didn't catch on because people didn't know what to do with it. They, you know, it was so different. And now I think it would be, if it came out now, it would be like, oh man, this thing is great. I'll binge watch it on Netflix or whatever. But, you know, at the time it was like, huh, this is weird.
Yeah. And the Larry Sanders Show was, I did see certain episodes of that and I was always kind of amused by the way they would. And I think you hit the right tone with it. It poked fun at the late night talk show, but you also knew that Shandling had a great affection for the genre, and in particular for the guy that gave him his biggest break, Johnny Carson.
All those guys just worship Carson. He and Letterman. Letterman was similar. Letterman made fun of the genre a lot, but he loved it, and he wanted the big job more than anything. He just never got it. But Gary Shandling, to me, the Larry Sanders Show is one of the best things I think that's ever been on television. And it really, I mean, he could get people on there to play themselves and really be pitching a movie or something, you know, doing something real, but portray themselves in the most unflattering light. And, but I also think that, and I think I wrote something about this, the trio of Larry Sanders, the host, played by Gary Shandling, his producer Artie, played by Rip Torn, and his sidekick Hank, played by Jeffrey Tambor, who's, hey now.
Yeah.
That's one of the great casts ever. And this thing kept going around on YouTube last night, and Hank was very, you know, they were all really insecure because, I mean, you've been around sports people and entertainment people a lot, and you know that's sort of what they're like. They're like, love me, love me, love me, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
and they're all like that, and they're all bitter, and they're all afraid and paranoid. But Hank is complaining to Larry Sanders that they don't, you know, you guys don't respect me, all you do is make fun of me, da da da. And he says, one of the great lines of all time, he says, and Hank's like, what about that time I chipped my tooth on the urinal? and Larry Sanders, Gary Shandling sits there for like just a beat, perfect. And he says, and he just almost under his breath, he's like, Hank, it was a back two. and then he just mutters, he's like, I don't even know how you did it.
Yeah, it's that show. It's and like you said in the column today, it doesn't go away. His genius is easy to find, and you could say the same thing about Carson. Anybody who's leftist, it's very easy to go and find what made them special. And I'm going to use that as kind of a transition to Joe Garagiola. I said this to somebody the other day, and I'm going to stick with it. I found it poetic that Joe Garagiola was on the Today Show at the same time that Hugh Downs was on that show, because for my money, and it's strange to say about Joe in this in the sense that he was a baseball player initially, but I don't think in our lifetime there have been two more versatile broadcasters than Joe Garagiola and Hugh Downs. They could do both of them, and I want to focus on Joe. Joe could do anything.
They both did do anything.
Right.
Joe Garagiola, and I read about him too, and I'm just going to give you like a quick little thing of what the kind of guy he was. You know well and better than I do what kind of guy he was. But when I, in the early 90s, they plucked me from covering City Hall and had me write this really smart Alex sports column. And it was a lot of fun. And now it would be nothing. It's what they do on the internet all the time. But at the time, it really rankled people, and people in our own sports department. A lot of traditional. The first time I met a Cardinals PR person, I swear I thought he was going to punch me. His face turned beet red. But it was fun, and it was something different. And you know, but it always, you know, I got a lot of hate mail and stuff. I was on KTAR with Pat McMahon, and he would do those panels, you know, on Friday.
The McMahon Group.
And yeah, and Garagiola and I were on there with somebody else, and I thought, oh God, he must hate me. And so if we're sitting there and we do this thing, or if he knows me at all, and he didn't seem like he knew me, and I was happy with that. We were leaving the studio, and I shook his hand, and I said, you know, Mr. Garagiola, I got to tell you, man, I said, it truly it's an honor to meet you. And he sort of winked at me, and he shook my hand, and he said, keep giving him hell. and I just thought it's on the one hand, it's like, this is a guy who, you know, a lot of people live here but aren't connected to the community, but it's like, at least he reads the paper. I mean, that's great, you know.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, it was kind of like this most old school baseball guy, the most old school guy in the most old school sport, winking and saying, I like what you're doing. And it really, I mean, it meant a lot to somebody who at the time was taking a lot of grief for what we were trying to do, you know. And it was just the nicest thing from the nicest guy. I mean,
yeah, that's exactly it. And you just touched on it. He could have easily lived in Phoenix for all these years and just kind of, you know, lived in Phoenix. But he was so involved in the community, loved this city so much. And as a result, two major American cities claim him as their own, and rightly so, Phoenix and St. Louis. I just, the way that media or television has evolved, it's really hard for a broadcaster to display versatility now, because we tend to really categorize our broadcasters. You wouldn't expect to see Lester Holt hosting a game show. Or wouldn't expect to see Pat Sajak doing the evening news. And it's unfortunate because versatility should be celebrated.
I agree. I think that we've gotten really pitted. I mean, you think a guy like Peter Gammons is known for baseball. He used to cover everything.
Right.
He could cover everything. Peter King used to write a lot about baseball before he became like a football beat guy. And all these guys did a lot of things. But as you said, the difference with Garagiola is, he did the thing I liked about the way he and Hugh Downs would do the Today Show was they didn't take it overly seriously. And I don't mean they clowned around the whole time.
No,
I mean, you know, they did, but there was a wink and a nod there, and it was like, hey, this is a morning show. Come on, I mean, you know, they didn't act like, you know, this is so serious. I love that. But Garagiola, I mean, he was, if you've ever seen the movie, the great Christopher Guest movie, Best in Show.
Yes.
About the dog. The announcer for that Fred Willard plays so great in that movie, he's based on Garagiola because he used to do the dog thing. It's like he would do anything. He knew you could plop him in there and there he was. I mean, if he didn't know everything about it, I think what another great strength of his was, he'd let you know, you know?
Right. There's another guy, Fred Willard. Someday we'll have to, next time I get a chance to do a segment with you, that guy is so underrated. He, you know, all the years that he was with Martin Mull, you kind of thought he's got a screw loose. And his last several characterizations have been of characters that were so square you could throw them on a Las Vegas crap table. like the dad of Amy in Everybody Loves Raymond. And it's just like, it's phenomenal the range this guy's got. But
let's make sure we do him when he's still alive.
Yeah. Hey, I appreciate it. I'm sorry we had to run through so many things so quickly. The other thing, and I don't know how much time we've got left, Ken Howard passed away this week, and he was on one of the most groundbreaking TV series, and it was basically his idea, The White Shadow. And that kind of just blew completely under the radar this week.
Boy, if you played high school basketball when that show was on, which I did, that was one of those times where you really felt like, and this did not happen a lot. I mean, there were shows about high school, like Happy Days and stuff like that. But that one, as you say, it was groundbreaking. It felt like high school. It felt real.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was a TV show. Some things were more dramatic, and they faced, you know, some things, you know, in a more concentrated fashion that you did. But it felt like, both on the sports, and it didn't skimp on the sports part. I mean, that's fine too, you know. I mean,
exactly.
I will always remember this when I try to teach this, when I coach like little Y basketball and stuff, that Ken Howard stood there at the end of the baseline and he said, "Who's the fastest player on the team?" And they said, "Spicoli." And Spicoli goes, and he says, "Stand there on the baseline." And he said, "I want you to dribble as fast as you can to the other end of the court." And so Spicoli takes off to dribble, you know, and Ken Howard just throws this long pass that, of course, gets there, you know, in a second. And he's like, "That's what I'm trying to show you. I don't care how fast you are with the ball. Throw the ball. Pass the ball."
Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I love that.
It, great but show. That was, Bill, I'm up against it.
Too, they killed somebody in the show once. So the
That's right.
Died. So
That's that right. Bill, I'm up against it. I hate to run, but we gotta scram. So I appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All righty.
Bill Cootie-Kuntz, thank you. Yeah, there's another one of those. We could go on and on and on. But there is this thing called the clock, and we have to go to a break. And obviously, as I said, you can check out sports360az.com, latest sports info. You can always catch this show at azcentral.com. And obviously, like I said, you think the show's going to go one way, and then the news happens, and it goes another. But that's the beauty of this program. So stick around. Lots to check out on sports360az.com, azcentral.com. Brad Sesmatch Show on a Friday. Hope you've got a really nice spring Easter weekend planned.